We are back again.
We're back. Welcome back. This week, price, usual. Project Icebreaker. Bitcoin devs proposing hierarchical channels to boost Lightning Network scalability. FTX and relaunching exchange. Oh. Fuji public beta. Twitter launching crypto trading. IMF and CBDC handbooks. The Silk Road, $3 billion Silk Road theft, and Representative Davidson introducing legislation to, it's not to fire SEC boss, but the headline obviously is to fire SEC boss, Gary Gensler.
Woo, let's go.
There we go. No Dave again.
No Dave, honestly. He's just such a part-timer. Oh well. Could be a nice little podcast without him.
Is what it is.
Yeah. These podcasts are a lot faster and less, like, there's no underlying anger, I don't feel.
Less about Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If I wonder if he'll listen back to this as well. Well, we say it to his face, don't we? There's too much about him, but, you know, just in case.
He only listens to the ones he's in, come on.
Yeah. that's quite true, actually. Yeah.
What's the price at, Danny?
$29,372.
Down a bit.
A little bit of a dip.
Is it down on this time last week, or is it?
Mm. Yeah, it was just breaching 30 last week.
And we got to 31.
We had a week around 30 to 31, didn't we? And then we're back to 29,372 at the minute. But that's just this morning. We was 30 this morning when I woke up. We just dipped down.
It's not much more to say about it, is there?
No, I don't know why it's dropped, so if I'm honest. I don't know if there's anyone seen.
But the thing is, it's not really a drop though, is it? You know, in the grand scheme of things, down a couple hundred quid, like
general fluctuation.
Mm. Yeah, it's not that exciting.
No, well, I don't think there's any news that's really made it do that. Obviously, markets open in Monday morning. There's often movements there, but yeah, nothing in particular.
Yeah, no biggie. I can't wait for the bull run. Now everyone will be like, oh, 40k this week. Oh, 45k, 50k.
Actually moving.
Yeah.
It has been very stable, hasn't it, this past couple of weeks?
Essentially a stable.
It's not been exciting at all.
No. Mm. I remember the good old days.
Should we wait for Project Icebreaker? We'll move that to
what a name. Left. Can I just say that? What a name.
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
All the budget went in on naming the project.
Probably did. The video and its name, I think. Mm.
I don't know what that is, but it sounds like a corporate, like...
It is very cool.
Conference thing. Well, let's have a Project Icebreaker. Everybody stand up and say your name.
We should do that for ourselves. Like for all our developments we do, we should like in projects, we'll give them a project name from now on.
Oh. And
we'll call them by like code names. See if how long that lasts.
Yeah.
I like it.
And then it'd just be nothing related at all. Like Project Volcano Fire. And it's like...
Well, that one is clever. Wait till you get to the Icebreaker and we'll explain what that is. That's actually quite clever.
Okay.
Bitcoin devs propose hierarchy. I can never say that word.
Hierarchy. Channels.
Hierarchical.
Hierarchical. Channels to boost Lightning Network scalability. You have questions on this, Molly, because we have not. I've not read it.
I've read it, but I didn't understand it. And I thought that you guys being techies might be able to explain it. But.
So preface this with me and Zach have not read it. We're going to wing the answers.
Okay. Right. So I'll read
someone comment on it, but I haven't read it.
Right. I'll go through the points from anyway, and then you guys can expand on it if you've got any input. So developers are exploring the use of hierarchy. Oh no, I can't even say either now.
It's hard.
I'll just call it hierarchy. Hierarchy channels to help speed up and make Lightning Network more scalable. It allows for flexible off-chain resizing of channels, enabling quick and cheap resizing without on-chain transactions, which add delays and costs. This is the bit where I don't understand. So, what does it mean by resizing channels, allowing for flexible off-chain resizing of channels?
So I think they've been working on this for a while. So imagine we both have a Lightning node.
Yeah.
We got one Bitcoin locked in together.
Yeah.
So that was in order to us lock that Bitcoin in, it required an on-chain transaction.
Mm-hmm.
So now say I want to resize that and actually I want to lock two Bitcoins in with you.
Okay.
At the moment, I would have to open another channel with you on-chain or close that one down and reopen it, which is all on-chain transactions.
Yeah.
This essentially allows us to resize it. So bring it up to a 2 Bitcoin channel without having to go on chain.
Okay.
Using this fancy tech.
Okay, so...
So it just means less of an on-chain footprint required for resizing Lightning channels, meaning, in theory, you should never have to close your Lightning channels.
Was there a new different name for this?
Yeah, I don't know if this is a different way of doing it, because I think this one doesn't require a Bitcoin soft fork to do.
Right.
Or I think the original way does.
Was it using PTLC's...
Yes, I think so, yeah. I don't know how this one works because I haven't read it, but that's okay. As much as I know.
That's interesting. So is it... Yeah, so this is quite a common thing then. People want to resizing channels.
Yeah, so this just helps... Obviously, Lightning was helping Bitcoin scale. Mm. This something like this will help Lightning scale even more because you just don't have to go back on-chain. So it's less of an on-chain footprint when you don't need it, essentially.
Okay. That's cool. That's a pretty simple explanation. Mm. Thanks.
Yeah. There we go.
Complicated words for simple explanations.
That's cool. I don't have anything else to add.
But that'll still be... That's in the pipe. It's been... This idea has been in the pipeline for years.
Yeah.
It'll still be a year or so away before...
There's a lot of them things.
We see anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of them, isn't there, that from a scalability perspective with Lightning and in terms of like even things like the like batching channel opens and things like that, and then what we're talking about there, changing the size and so on. Mm-hmm. That, you know, will be very handy once you say you can batch. People always say there's like that example, isn't there? The someone ran the numbers on it and said that, you know, it'll take, you know, was it 7 years or something to open a channel, Lightning channel, for every single person on the planet or something ridiculous because of Bitcoin's block size being too small to do that and have, you can only get so many transactions in a block and so on. But then if you take into account, you can batch open Lightning channels, which obviously allow you for much more transactions with inside. Or much more outputs within inside a transaction, which would allow for much more channels to be created within a block. That would then allow scalability to be much better. And I think there was the guy who ran it. Was it like 21 days? Something like it was a number of days or maybe a small amount of weeks that I would actually take to open a channel based off current throughput by batching every channel open to as big a transaction as you could. It would only take a matter of, say, weeks to actually create a channel for every single person on the planet, which we know is also not a realistic thing. People are not going to open a channel for every single person on the planet. And not particularly anytime soon. But if you can change the size of the channels, like Zach's saying there as well, on top of things like the batching side, all of a sudden, okay, you take, even if you said take a month to open a channel for every single person on Earth, then you could just automatically... change the size of that channel, then all of a sudden you only have to open a channel for yourself once, theoretically, in your lifetime. This is a ridiculously high level thought process.
How long does it take to open a channel?
As long as a Bitcoin transaction takes.
Right.
Just needs one confirmation. Technically, you can do it at zero confirmations.
So why are you saying a month?
If you opened a channel for every single person on the planet, 7 billion people on the planet, that's 7 billion channels you have to open.
Yeah.
So you would have to do 7 billion
Bitcoin transactions.
Okay.
But then if you batch one transaction with 1,000 outputs, which would be 1,000 channels theoretically into it, you could then start to like scale it better. And then obviously if you can change the size of that channel whenever you feel like it, then obviously you can alter that and adapt, and you don't have to then keep opening and closing channels. You can just have one channel created and then you use that for the rest of your life in theory. Okay. Obviously that'd be connected to a node that if that node ever goes down, you'd have to close and then reopen with a different node and so on. There's nuanced arguments to everything there, but you get the general gist of scaling. I think the takeaway is scaling, even with Lightning, is still being worked on and there's still lots to come, and actually it's showing that these sort of things will be possible and you'll easily be able to scale to pretty much infinite transactions.
It works in just simple terms as well. If you might have initially opened a Lightning channel with you, for example, of thinking the volume we're going to do is going to be half a Bitcoin over the next year.
But then is that half a Bitcoin in total?
It doesn't really matter. Right. Just through the channel.
Yeah.
It could go bit to you, bit back, bit to you, bit, and you could do that forever. You could do that for 1,000 Bitcoins worth of transactions, but still just no
bigger
than...
But my max I can do is only what the channel size is.
In one transaction.
Yeah.
So then we might, you know, if we're business partners or whatever, we're doing more business between each other. We need to expand the channel, so we're doing more volume. And it saves us having to do an on-chain transaction, where in times, like, if the backlog's full and that kind of thing. Yeah, it's quite cool.
Yeah.
Cool, so bit of tech.
On the flip side of that, people will potentially argue and think that, you know, the block space and the fees becomes an issue. That's like the ordinals crowd out there saying ordinals will create a fee market for the miners and things like that, because there's, if the transactions are all being taken off chain onto Lightning, then obviously there is less transaction fees for miners, which is why they're trying to argue ordinals is good, because there's lots of on-chain fees and the miners need that to keep continuing, but right now they don't. And that's a market that I guess nobody knows the answer to, how we see that plays out in the future. When I say the future, it's like, you know, this is potentially 100 years away or something, when we're not going to be here to see it.
I do want to get my head into how technically this works, though, because if you're expanding the size of a channel, the Bitcoin has to come from somewhere if you're not doing an on-chain transaction.
Yeah.
So I want to work out technically how that works.
Yeah. I wonder if you have to have so much in the
original transaction address. Or something. Yeah.
So you can then lock in with the same address. So yeah.
It's, so I'll do some research.
Would you just send Bitcoin into that address at some point if needed to be to top up again? But then you're already doing an on-chain transaction to top that up. So
yeah, not quite sure how it technically works, but I'll find out.
Sounds like a positive thing, though.
It's cool.
Yeah, all steps in the right direction of more scalability, which is good.
Cool.
Quick one, FTX. Not spoke about them for a while, thankfully. FTX recovered. See, this is funny. I've not looked at the detail of this, but me and Zach were talking on this the other day.
Yeah.
So the headline is FTX... A bankrupt FTX have recovered $7.3 billion in assets and relaunching their exchange in Q2 this year, which we'll get onto how ridiculous that is in a minute. But what me and Zach were talking about on this was the price from when they went bankrupt and then when they were trying to figure out, it was like December time when they were trying to figure out how much they actually had in their assets and they actually had hold of, which I think ended up being was like 2.1 billion or something like that, 2.something billion. And now they're saying they've recovered over 7 billion. But actually it was, say, 2.4 billion or whatever it was at the time. But the price was like $16,000 at the time. The price is nearly double now. So in theory, they've probably got nearly 5 billion anyway, just from the original chunk they've recovered. So they've probably only recovered an extra maybe one to two billion actually from the original chunk that they got. And just because the price has gone up, now the value of that obviously is a lot more.
So it looks like they've recovered more.
So it looks like they've recovered more than I think they have done there. Maybe if I read the article, it'll explain that in some ways, but I don't think I've seen any detail of that so far.
No.
So even that in itself sounds a bit ridiculous, but then obviously them looking to relaunch in Q2.
How could you ever recover from this, like as FTX, to even consider relaunching?
I don't know. I can't even think why. Like, I don't know how the, well, one is like how they're allowed. I don't know.
Surely they're not. And if they try and actually do it, they won't be allowed.
They'll have to put, I assume they're going to have to put, because I'm not sure, the bankruptcy is going through the US, is it? Or is it going through... So where was their headquarters? Was it not Dubai?
Bahamas, was it? Wasn't it Bahamas?
Oh, Bahamas, of course, yes. Yeah. They were in Dubai, weren't they, as well at one point? So we did go through the Bahamas, but then it was the US that's pulled them in. He's been arrested by the US. So I don't know who the bankruptcy is going through at the minute. I can't quite remember. It's been too long since we looked at these. But if they, assumably they'd have to get, say it's the US, whatever department would have to give them permission. They'd, I guess, in theory, have to make a good argument as to why relaunching would help recover the funds for what they've lost for their customers or something. Really not sure. It just sounds ridiculous because nobody's going to go and use it.
No. I mean, if you just even if they relaunched and you were searching them on Google, surely all the news would come up before the actual search result would put you off straight away. Like for anybody who hasn't heard about it.
You know when they say any PR is good PR?
Not always.
So it just seems like just absolutely crazy headline story thought process. I can't make sense of why the hell they would even consider that.
I don't even know who is FTX now.
The CEO that took over is like the...
he's got a hard job.
Can you fact check us that? Well, he took over just to go through the bankruptcy side because he'd done it in previous roles, hasn't he?
Yeah, I would assume they'd relaunch with a brand new management team. And,
yeah.
I'd hope they relaunch with a brand new name as well. So
running it from prison.
Yeah.
John J. Ray the Third.
John J. Ray.
It's a cool name.
The Third.
Yeah, there's not one, there's not two, there's three of them. That's hilarious.
They should just relaunch with the name backwards, XTF.
Yeah.
No one will know.
Undoing all the issues we've done.
We go again.
I just can't believe that they'd even consider that. It seems crazy, but maybe they've got some ridiculous argument as to why it'll be able to help recuperate all the lost funds, maybe.
Yeah. We'll see. Look forward to that playing out.
Fuji, you had questions. Again, this is another one we should preface with.
I haven't read this at all on this.
Yeah.
But you had questions about it, didn't you?
I had a quick look at it.
Isn't it a milkshake on our fridge, isn't it?
Fuji.
The word looks the same.
Yeah. Fuji's a water, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fuji's a place.
And a place. And a place. Yeah.
I think it's a place first. I assume the water came second, doesn't
I had a quick look at it, but I don't know. I feel like I'm speaking on behalf of hopefully other people who are too scared or too embarrassed to speak up about not understanding any of this. They put out a tweet basically announcing the public beta of the Fuji app. Is it Fuji? Fuji? Fuji. I'm going to say Fuji. So it's a decentralized and non-custodial borrowing protocol allowing users to draw loans against Bitcoin used as collateral or locked in smart contracts called safes. Like, to me, that's just, like, I can't break that down. Like, that's just a lot of big words in a big sentence that I don't understand.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
To Mikey, could you explain? This is when I get ChatGPT to explain.
It's a non-custodial. Using, like, DLCs to go on down.
I think so. Yeah.
What's a DLC?
As far as I'm aware.
Come on.
Discrete log contract.
You got to break it down for people like me.
When people used to talk about, like, smart contracts, basically, in between it's similar to Lightning, how Lightning is created and you create a transaction between my node and your node when you're opening a channel.
Yeah.
And that locks in one Bitcoin, for example.
Yeah.
So like Zach was saying, around half a Bitcoin locked in your channel, you've effectively got something locked in there. Mm-hmm. And if we've got the channel between us, if I want to close that channel, I would close it and say, right, send, I've sent only 0.4 Bitcoin across to you, I've still got 0.6 mm-hmm. on my side, I can close the channel and take my 0.6 back. Mm-hmm. And we both agree that, both mm-hmm. our nodes agree that, because our book basically tallies up with each other. There's things around you can argue for, like, I could say, actually, I've got full one Bitcoin and try and, like, screw you out of it, but you wouldn't.
What an asshole.
You wouldn't agree and you'd disagree, and then the bad actor would basically get slapped as well.
I think the key to it is it means you don't have to trust each other. I think that's a key factor.
Mm. Yeah.
So you don't have to trust Danny to give you that 0.6. The contract is the trust, essentially.
Okay.
So from my understanding, again, this is because I've not read how exactly this Fuji works. They are doing something similar to that, and they will lock that smart contract essentially mm-hmm. in to say, right, I put one Bitcoin collateral up, and somebody say you've loaned me the equivalent in USD stablecoin. So
FUSD.
FUSD, yeah. Okay, so this is a new thing, I think, as well.
What does the F stand
for? A new stablecoin. I have no idea. Fuji?
I guess. Yeah, maybe.
So that'll be, Fuji USD. So I've locked, say I've, makes numbers easy. So I've locked $100,000 worth of Bitcoin into that channel, should we mm-hmm. call it. And then you would loan me the FUSD. And the FUSD, you might loan at 50% collateral that we've agreed beforehand. Mm-hmm. So you actually loan me $50,000 of FUSD. And you've then got $100,000 of my Bitcoin locked up. Mm-hmm. So as I would then pay you back, there'll be like timelines and things like that, of repayment reschedules and all that sort of stuff, payment schedules. And then if Bitcoin price dropped to say 60% and it came down to 60,000, then maybe I'd have to top up that Bitcoin address and that contract with mm-hmm. some more collaterals to make sure it moves up back above say 70% or whatever. I guess it will be whatever the contracts, the parties have agreed mm-hmm. at the time, and assumably you'll be able to move that to different things. I think the stablecoin, there's talk around with it, it's linked to Liquid as well. I'm not quite sure how it's linked to Liquid in certain ways.
Mm.
But it's, I guess this is the direction. It's kind of like DeFi, angle. People have been trying to do DeFi on altcoins and stuff, haven't they? So there's, within these smart contracts, you always have to remember as well that there is room for exploitation and
yeah. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because a lot of DeFi projects
are exploited.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand really why this is anything different or anything more saying.
It's not. This is a smart contract piece that will do something. It could have an exploit.
It's just like
at some
sushi
point,
swap or
and
something.
Someone could exploit it. It's simpler.
Yeah, I was about to say it's not a Turing complete language, is it?
Yeah.
I mean, so in theory, it's yeah,
it's simpler than the altcoin ones that I think have been created over time. Yeah. So it, because it's simpler theoretically, there'll be less surface for an attack, basically.
I mean, this is just a part of the industry that I can't get my head around. I don't understand outside buying and selling. Like I think
it's from a technical point of view, it's pretty cool. But yeah, I don't know if there's a demand for a. An uncollateralized loan, trustless.
The only way I think we always talk about is, like, say, UK and US and things is tax efficient route, because then you could put your $100,000 of Bitcoin down, take a $50,000 loan against it, pay that back over time with a little bit of interest, don't get me wrong, but you would then keep hold of your Bitcoin. And then if the Bitcoin price goes up to $200,000, for example, in that the value of how much you own, then you can take another loan in theory and get more back, and you would be able to actually make use of that money rather than selling your Bitcoin. So it wouldn't realize a capital gain and then it'd be a taxable event.
Right.
So it potentially is people's way around taking loans instead of selling the Bitcoin to allow them to avoid a taxable event.
Potentially.
Yeah.
But
the risk, the downside of that is if the price drops, then you could get liquidated and you have to I assume it would auto sell your Bitcoin for you. Again, I'm not sure where they pull the US dollar at the price.
Probably I wonder if it would just auto release that Bitcoin to the other party.
I assume it would.
And then they can then go and sell it.
I assume it would.
So as an everyday person though, why would you do this over just taking out a regular loan?
The taxable event. So if you've got Bitcoin, you go and take that loan. If you go and get a loan from Barclays or whatever, they have the maximum UK is usually like 25K is a maximum personal loan. Then beyond that, it becomes a bit more difficult. But you've got to have then credit checks and provide loads of information and so on. Whereas this, you could effectively take the loan theoretically from anyone else around the world. You may not even know who that person is, and you can go and take a loan from them. And it's almost like peer-to-peer loaning.
Right.
And you wouldn't have to have a credit check done on you. You just put that Bitcoin up as collateral. So it avoids, I guess it avoids credit checks, probably hassle, because you could probably do it fairly instantaneous once it's all set up and working.
And it's access to a different currency if you don't want to sell Bitcoin, isn't it, essentially?
Yeah.
But you need access to cash.
So there is, and again, because it's avoiding a taxable event there, if you don't want to get stung and you need some cash for some reason quickly, or you want a larger than, say, 25K, and it's just an easier way to get, again, trying to think, like, you know, if you've got £1 million worth of Bitcoin, but banks are hard work when it comes to selling and providing source of where that Bitcoin's come from and so on, and even though it's perfectly legitimate and there's no issues with that, where that Bitcoin's come from, not only do questions get asked, banks obviously sometimes don't even want to try and do the due diligence. They just say, nope, you're not doing that, see you later. I mean, I know that historically myself and a lot of other people. We was talking about, was it Santander the other day, because they still have the policy apparently of, if you try and go for a mortgage with Santander and your deposit comes from crypto, they just blanket say no. They don't even try and do a check on you.
Oh, really?
So for example like this, you wouldn't be able to go and get a mortgage because your deposit would come from crypto.
Right.
So yeah, I was years ago when I went for a mortgage through them. We're talking about 7 years ago now, 6-7 years ago. And they
just said,
no because of crypto. So yeah, as did a couple of others. But that was years ago. Now you expect them to have slightly changed, but apparently Santander haven't. Which is crazy, because Santander own a portion of Coinbase, do they? I think their investment arm invested in Coinbase a while back.
Cool. Okay.
So there you go.
I mean, that's still very confusing for me, but
I think the main thing going forwards is that yes, it's complicated in the background and all these big fancy words and things, mm-hmm. but the reality is, like, for example, we could end up building it into the Coin Corner app. That might just be sort of a hypothetical situation. We have it in the Coin Corner app, and you can just from there click, right, you want a loan, click a button, say how much you want a loan, and you'll have your Bitcoin, your Coin Corner wallet, and you'll say you've got 100 grand again. You'll be saying, right, I want a 10 grand loan. It'll say, right, you've got to lock 20 grand of the Bitcoin up in here. Click a button, does that, gives you the FUSD. In theoretically, you could almost flip that FUSD into GBP or Euro, or whatever currency you want at that point, and then you can go off and use your loan. And it's like, in the background, it's taken a loan from some other party. And we've just put a nice, fancy front face on it to make it the UX nice and simple for the customer.
Yeah.
But behind the scenes, there's lots of complicated things going on, but you don't need to know what's happening there. You'd need to know the risks and who you're doing that with and so on and all that stuff, but technically you don't have to know anything. So eventually the UX will become much, much nicer.
Yeah. I think this is the thing, like when they put out these announcements, they are just like for the everyday person, you know, like I've obviously been in this industry like 8-9 years now, and stuff like this is still way over my head. But then it's not something I'm really that interested in. I'm just like buying Bitcoin and hodling.
But that's technical, isn't it? It's techie. Talk we're talking about here, so it's confusing to a lot of people.
Next.
This was hopefully a very quick one. Twitter launching crypto and stock trading in partnership with eToro. It just winds me up, the not the Twitter thing, but it does, but I'll come on to that. But the on Twitter last week when this came out, it was like everyone was tweeting about like all the big Bitcoin news accounts and things, and they were tweeting about Twitter adding Bitcoin trading and wallet or something for users, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, when you actually then, because none of them ever link to any detail of it, either, which frustrates hell out of me still.
But no sources.
You actually go and look on what that is, and it looks like it's just they're being an affiliate for eToro. That's the short of it. Eventually, maybe they're going to add their own wallets and try and integrate it all into the app and do everything, because Elon keeps banging on about being this financial app, doesn't he? But the what it is, as far as my understanding...
But isn't it already live?
He said it's live, but I think it's like one of them that's beat alive in probably to a fraction of people in the US randomly.
No, but I think I've... Do you not remember, if you just go Bitcoin price, it gives you it, and then there's a buy button which takes you to eToro.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is that not it?
That's what it... Yeah, it's a... But now there's a place in your settings. If you go to the settings, and then I can't what section it is. But from there, it will then take you to... eToro, basically. It's called sign up with eToro and do it that way. So it's they're basically being an affiliate for eToro.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So, and you know, don't get me wrong, some people will say, okay, well, it's a step in the right direction because they're looking to, but they're also adding every shitcoin that eToro have and adding stocks and shares and trading it. And it makes sense in some ways for traders on Twitter, where you've got lots of traders on Twitter and the people are talking about stock, and you could just have a little icon within that tweet that their stock they're talking about saying, go and buy this stock, and you can click and click the link to it. But that also makes sense. Is it done by Facebook? Somebody tried this years ago, like on, say, Facebook, and it was like, if you were talking about a particular product, it would then... in a post, like a Facebook post or a tweet, it would then create like a link to where to go and buy it from. And they would then gain on the affiliate commission that they're sending you off to. So it would theoretically work in a similar capacity to that and doing that. But it's, I guess, a Twitter way of trying to, how do we make more money quickly? It's a crappy thrown together partnership to try and quickly make some money.
Do we ever get to the bottom of why Elon put the Doge coin dog?
I assume it's because of this everywhere. And it was like an indicator.
So random.
I assume it's indicator for this is coming.
No.
But I had no idea.
Oh, you mean the logo thing?
Yeah.
That was from the guy that tweeted him saying Elon buy Twitter and change the logo to the Dogecoin one.
Elon did reply saying I've done this now or something. Yeah. But I don't know if it was because of that or whether it was because of there's no actual explanation to it.
Yeah.
You're asking for Elon to explain his thinking.
That's true.
I just assume market manipulation.
Well, you saw it. Did you see the Dogecoin chart? And before it was announced, it all of a sudden started ramping up. And then when it was announced, it shot up. So it was all the Twitter insiders obviously trading bought Dogecoin beforehand.
That's so bad. I can't help but love the Doge dog, though. I want to get one.
I mean, the dogs, yeah, the dog's nice, but I mean, the whole...
Oh, yeah.
Let's move on. IMF. So you're going to touch on this, not Isaac, but IMF to publish CBDC handbook in response to increasing demand for guidance, which is going to tie into Project Icebreaker.
This is Project Icebreaker.
So well, I read this on this. I didn't read this, but I kind of skimmed it. I think 30 to 40 countries have asked the IMF for help with CBDCs. Like IMF are the all-seeing experts of CBDCs.
Well, they are, yeah.
So now they said they are panic putting together a handbook.
Does that not go to show you that 30 to 40 countries don't understand what on earth it is or how it's going to work? And yeah, it's such a big thing.
They're looking for a central point of guidance, aren't they? Someone, some expert guidance. I think I only highlighted this one to talk about was because we've spoken previously about CBDCs, and I was saying we were talking about my thing was I'd like to see a pros and cons eventually. So I'd like to see this.
Maybe that would be in the guidebook.
Well, exactly. In this guidebook, we see a pros and cons list, I'm assuming. So I'm looking forward to seeing that guidance. Whether they'll make that public or whether they'll try and push that privately will be interesting. I'm sure it'll get leaked at some point if it's going to 40 different countries. but yeah, that not much to talk about on that particular one, but that led us on to Project Icebreaker.
Mm-hmm. Molly.
Here it comes.
Come on.
What does Sweden, Norway and Israel have in common?
Oh, I did not expect Israel on the end of there.
Project Icebreaker.
Whoa.
It's like this an announcement.
This is on the YouTube video. We need like
what is Project Icebreaker, you ask? So Sweden, Norway and Israel central banks have all come together to do a joint pilot with CBDCs.
Right.
Which essentially is like Send Globally / the Lightning Network for CBDCs, where they're using HDLCs, which is a Lightning Network piece of technology, in order to basically route payments between each of their own CBDCs.
Right.
And it came with a very cringy video, which was.
I've not watched the video properly. Yeah.
I've not seen a video.
Skipped along, but not watched.
So it basically allows these individual countries. So Sweden will launch CBDC.
Yeah.
In their own local currency. So will Norway. So will Israel. Yeah. And then if I want to basically send my CBDC, convert it for Norwegian CBDC, it's using this Project Icebreaker. Project Icebreaker.
So, you know, this is, if you remember, it's probably maybe about a year ago or something now, we did our little team meetings every couple of weeks, and we're talking around CBDCs and Lightning, and I was saying about making them interoperable with each other. So making, like, you know, the UK would have to be interoperable with France, and France with, you know, Belgium, and then with South Africa and with every other country around the world. And how you make that interoperable, the easy answer is all use like one, or use like Bitcoin Lightning, use Lightning, and you can then be interoperable and you can flip out in your local currency, which is effectively like what we would do with like Bitnob and things like that, with the partnerships there, going from say pounds in the UK to Naira in Nigeria, that we're all using Lightning to be that interoperable technology and piece in the middle. So these guys are trying to create that interoperable technology piece in the middle, which is just Lightning.
Yeah.
Using very similar technology very similar terminology. Technology.
They do say HTLCs.
Yeah. But that's just terminology of what something like what that could end up being. Yeah, theirs version.
Oh, yeah.
Comparison to Bitcoin Lightning could be two, not completely different things, but similar. Obviously, it wouldn't be decentralized and open source and public and everything. It'll be very much closed. But I think
why do they always try and do this? Always a closed.
The control? They keep the control of it, don't they? And they keep the access to it. Where they could just actually all use Lightning and do that exact same thing, and then flip out at their end to the local currency, because there's a market there for Bitcoin to their local currency, so they can easily do that. I think going forwards, the problem with the route they're going is they're going to have to get. You know, they're starting this with, is it three or four countries?
Three.
Three countries.
Very
Nordic.
Weird combination of countries as well, by the way.
Yeah. Well, two Nordic and then Israel.
Project Icebreaker.
Yeah.
Has no rules.
But I thought the Nordic, the Icebreaker, clever name, because it's like cold and whatnot. And
oh, is that?
I assumed that's what it was all about. An icebreaker is like, yeah.
Well, and then Israel just came along and they were like, oh.
They're breaking the ice. I had no idea why they've got thrown in, but they did. But they would, at the minute, them three, even if they crack on with this project and they can then have like interoperable trade, should we call it, between the three of them, the currency FX between them. But then what happens when, you know, Spain want to join in and then Japan want to join in? Mm. And then, you know, they're either all going to have to abide by the rules these three have created to start with, or they're going to have to all go to something that's like Bitcoin Lightning and it's decentralized and they don't, there's no obeying a particular country. I don't think you're ever going to get every country in the world to obey and work on the one protocol that is theoretically controlled by now would be these three people.
Yeah.
These three countries.
Is this like a country version of the R3 thing from years ago with all the banks?
Yeah.
And look just, how that turned out.
Just said just use Bitcoin or just use Lightning, something that's already there, not controlled by anybody and is open. And you can go and contribute if you want to change the code to something particular, you can go and contribute and request it and things. So it's there all available and they appreciate that they all think in the control aspects for a large portion of this.
Sometimes they just got to let go though.
Yeah, I think there definitely must be some Bitcoiners working in there or they definitely know about the Lightning Network.
To use that terminology.
And even they have some routing thing where it can go through several hops. If you're not directly connected to the end currency, you can go through. So say I want to go from Sweden to Israel. I can go through Norway, convert to their local currency, and they'll convert for me.
Yeah.
So it can go on like a kind of Lightning Network hop.
Which could have just, you could have just used the Lightning Network. This is the thing, like, we're like, say, between, we haven't really particularly got any of them countries, have we? But like, we would do that from UK to Kenya, for example. We can go through from, and actually, you could go from UK to Philippines, but you can go from UK via Coin Corner, say to Philippines via Pouch, but actually you could go via Bitnob because Bitnob are also integrated into Pouch, aren't they now? So you could actually go from Coin Corner and UK person wanting to send to the Philippines, but actually it goes via Bitnob and then from Bitnob over to Pouch in the Philippines, which is effectively like what you're saying there. Yeah, it's kind of interoperable in that way. Not technically how that would work, but...
Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of that meme with Scooby-Doo where they take the mask off and it's just like the Lightning Network behind behind it.
Oh, it's like the, I've made this. Oh, we've made this. Yeah. Oh, no, I've made this.
That's what they're doing with this, I think. And the other messed up thing is they can actually just, when I'm saying just use Lightning, they could actually just use Lightning and have private nodes between the three countries.
Yeah.
So they can only interact and only have liquidity and only access each other's, so they would know exactly the source of all the funds and everything around it because they are just connected to each other and they're not connected to the outside Lightning world. So it'd be like its own little private Lightning network.
Maybe that's what they do.
Maybe that is what they're doing. But you'd have to still use Bitcoin to do that on the network, obviously. But this is where I'm saying, like, on the Swedish side, they need to flip out to is it Swedish krona? They would flip out to that via a Bitcoin, say, exchange where they're able to sell the Bitcoin. So it would just come in and that's your FX rate. But yeah, they could easily do that. It's
send maybe globally. At some point the light bulb will go on and they'll be like, oh.
It's send globally, but countries doing it instead of companies. Yeah, yeah. Instead of us and Bitnob and Pouch doing it, it's countries trying to do it, but using their own thing rather than the Lightning Network.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Okay. Well,
they'll just take it as they've taken inspiration from some global.
Yeah. It's not a bad thing, right? Yeah. It's just a...
So Sweden,
it could be
Israel,
better.
Norway.
Norway have copied us.
Project Icebreaker. They got a bad name.
Yeah, then send globally.
Send globally, Project Icebreaker.
Yeah. We should rebrand.
Yeah.
Just call it Icebreaker. moving on. Individual behind the $3 billion Silk Road Bitcoin theft sentenced to 1 year in prison.
Yeah, the only point I have on this is 1 year seems incredibly tame for
$3 billion.
Yeah, for a crime he concealed for 10 years.
And Ross Ulbricht has got
two life sentences without parole.
Yeah, that's going to cause some controversy.
Yeah, it's 1 year and 1 day, like, to be precise. But, you know, yeah, I really don't have anything else to add to that except it just seems like a really tame
sentence.
Yeah, I wonder what the actual charges were, technically. Yeah. He's the one they found it under his bed
in a popcorn
tin. His hardware wallet.
Was it under his bed? Was it in? Was it under the floorboard?
Yeah, yeah.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah. I remember seeing the picture of it. And
that's a pretty cool hiding place.
How did what? I can't remember the backstory of who he was and how he stole that.
Can you remember? I can't remember either. Mikey,
cool. Quick fact checkers.
He wasn't the guy that found the bug on there, was he? And he was like withdrawing,
exploited it. Maybe it was.
He might have been.
Can't quite remember.
Do you think? So it's been 10 years, though. Do you think he's these last 10 years been like?
It's a good 10 years.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't. I don't think he moved anything, did he?
Oh yeah.
Did he not?
I don't think. I think
so. He just lived in fear every single day for 10 years.
I assume he was probably leaving it long enough to, in the future, maybe at the point when you could then obscure your transactions and bet with better privacy. Maybe he was thinking, I'll wait off until there's better privacy on chain and I can do something. Or maybe he was just keeping it for
just a rainy day.
I don't know, historic. But what happens if they were stolen funds and you died and then your next of kin inherited them? What would happen? They still get taken off him? They wouldn't get done for the crime.
No, they'd get taken off him, though.
But would they get them taken off him? It depends where you live in jurisdiction, I guess, what laws they are. But maybe that's, you know, another consideration.
Well, he was going to save him and frame his kid.
Not frame his kid, because his kid won't get done for it, but his kid would get left these things. And his kid would be like, oh, yeah, that was my dad.
It's 3.4 billion. Oh, no, it's not.
But I don't know. Yeah, how would that work?
Don't know.
If he went and lived in a different country that didn't have potentially rules around that, that might be an interesting one. Inherit it into the child's name in a country jurisdiction that wouldn't have anything against him inheriting it. There's one to figure out.
Leave the listeners with that one.
Yeah, wasn't it some IP address thing they caught him with, I think?
I don't know.
After like 10 years.
Don't know.
I thought they were still looking for him after 10 years. You don't think they'd... Yeah, you know, would you not give up after a couple of years? I don't know how the law system works.
Cases,
but you know, he's only got a year, so it's all right.
And one day,
yeah, a year and one day, yeah.
So he made 9 fraud or fake accounts, and then he made an initial deposit of between 200 and 2,000 Bitcoin on them, and then using a lag in the market's transaction system, which allowed someone to withdraw their own escrow multiple times, he triggered a rapid series of transactions that allowed him to transfer approximately 50,000 Bitcoin from Silk Road into his own accounts.
That sounds a lot more technical than he just double-clicked the withdrawal button.
Withdrawal button, yeah.
Basically, let's see what happens.
Double-click the withdrawal button.
Yeah. That sounds way more complicated than just double-clicking.
It was the same exploit Mt. Gox had, wasn't it? They had a similar exploit to that. I know that is then, because it falls under, we know in the UK there's a law with that where if a bank ATM, for example, you go and press, right, I want to withdraw 100 quid and it gives you 200 quid, you don't keep that money in error of the bank. You actually legally have to give that back to the bank. There's a law that sits around that says it's not like a finders keepers style sort of thing. It's more of a... the bank will ask for it back at some point, and if you don't hand it back, then that's illegal. You have to hand
it back. There's loads of those stories. Like, I woke up with $2 million in my account and went out spending.
Yeah, shouldn't have done that. I wonder if that scenario of what's happened to him there is basically that, isn't it? He's clicked a button multiple times, don't get me wrong, whether knowingly or unknowingly, because some people will do it unknowingly and end up with double the amount of Bitcoin in their balance. Now, Silk Road doesn't exist and actually was in a criminal enterprise anyway. How does that sit in the eyes of the law in some countries that wouldn't have that particular law around it with the finders keepers? Don't know.
It's kind of probably why he was only 1 year, like a lash horse, harsh than you expect. But yeah,
although he clearly knew how to exploit it and did that because to get $3 billion, although... Yeah,
wow, you sound like you're trying to cut him slack here.
I'm trying to figure out. I need to know the details. Like back then, 1,000 bitcoins weren't worth that much because this was it 2010, 11?
So this says he unlawfully obtained over 50,676 bitcoin. At the time it was seized, the bitcoin was worth more than 3 billion. But I don't know, that's at the time it was seized, not the time he stole it.
So that was only recently, he said it was seized a year ago,
so when
he stole it in 2012.
2012 was when he did it, so it'd be 2012 price. 2012 50,000 coins,
yeah, which 2012 depending on what time
pennies.
That's low. Yeah, it could have been under a dollar at one point, I think, during that time.
2012 showing the average price was $5.28.
So yeah, $5. So it's $250,000, $250,000, which isn't, it's a lot, don't get me wrong, but it's also not a lot when you think of it. And he's now worth $3 billion.
Mm. Yeah, but I bet he's been sat there over the last 10 years going, shit, this has got bigger than I planned.
Back at the time when he theoretically committed the crime, it was $250,000. It wasn't as big as you expect now.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he got a year and one day.
Yeah, kind of makes some sort of sense.
Oh, well, wish him all the best. See him in a year.
What's happened to them funds been seized now with the US probably getting auctioned off at some point?
They've been flogging all their hoard, haven't they, recently?
Part of the auction. The silence is us waiting for Mikey.
Doesn't say, doesn't say what's going to be done with the Bitcoin on this particular article.
Okay.
Yeah, they tend to auction them off, don't they? So,
cool. Last one.
Hold on, sorry, when they auction them off, do they auction them off for... How does the price work with auctioning Bitcoins off?
You just put a bid in.
So you could pay well over market for the Bitcoins?
You could pay well under.
Well under, yeah.
Why? So why would you ever want those coins? Why would you just not go and buy from...
Generally, I imagine most of them go under the market, current market rate.
Right.
So it's like a large OTC buy that doesn't affect the market price.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to buy 50,000 Bitcoins,
you
would move the market quite heavily unless you could do it all off market. Right. So this would be a way to do it without moving the market too much.
Okay.
So people would want to not move the market, get in, and then wait for the market to move. If they start acquiring now, and they wanted 50,000 Bitcoins, they might only end up with, if they did it on market, they might only end up with like 40,000 because the price has gone up with their initial price.
So even buying at a slight premium would still be beneficial.
Yeah, than moving the market.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you can, there must be a minimum. Like someone like me can't just go in and buy 10 quid's worth of Bitcoin, can you, under market?
I know you have to go and buy the whole thing.
The whole lot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Generally, they'll do it in like, they might do it in batches or something, like 10,000 at a time or something. Right. I don't know what they do it like, but yeah, it's big batches. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well.
That's when you get syndicates together. A lot of people get syndicates to go and buy them. Yeah. That's what What's-His-Face did. Who was it? For the original Silk Road. Was it the original Silk Road ones?
Why do I want to say Max Kaiser?
No, not him. I forgot his name now. We'll come back to him. But they did that with the syndicate and a lot of, like, all came together. Barry Silbert. Is it Barry Silbert?
Oh, okay. That guy.
A Genesis guy.
He's the coin that... he's a digital currency group, isn't he, Barry Silbert?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It says Tim Draper won part of the auction.
Draper.
Draper.
Yeah. I think he did.
And then Barry Silbert is mentioned as well. Yeah. He won 48,000. Draper got 29,000.
Yeah. So it's like, I think a syndicate of them all come together, didn't they, to buy the chunk, from what I remember. This is a while ago now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So Paterna Capital, an investment fund founded by Dan Moorhead, said in its newsletter it's also participating and has formed a syndicate for the auction.
Yeah. And they all went in. So, yeah, Tim Draper got some, Thingy got some, Barry got some.
Should we chip in, create a little syndicate?
I'm sure there'll be already a syndicate out there, probably. You can probably just go and join in.
Oh, so you don't want to create one with me then? Wow.
That's a no.
It sounds like a lot of effort.
I'm sure if you Google, you can find one.
A little busy at the minute. Right, we'll have to quickly move. Representative Davidson to introduce legislation to fire SEC boss Gensler for crypto overreach.
He's firing, what, he wants to fire Gary, sweet Gary Gensler?
Yeah, sweet Gary Gensler, yeah. He's, he's proposing, it was just one tweet, was it? I've not seen any further detail in the tweet, but it was meant to be that he's trying to bring in legislation to change the structure of the SEC chairman role. So it becomes it moves it to... one that reports to the board, is it?
Yeah, it'd be a legislation that removes the chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission and replaces the role with an executive director that reports to the board where authority resides. Former chairs of the SEC are ineligible.
Which would mean that's why it's saying in the headline they can fire. He's doing it to fire him. He's doing it. If that came in, then they wouldn't be allowed to apply for that job, which in theory would put him out of a job.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's not firing him as such. He's just trying to change the structure of how the department works. I have no idea how that is even going to go through. I assume he's going to have to get lots of votes from other senators, is it? And whatever it is in the US there, I'm not sure. It's a little bit crazy, but I think because Gary Gensler was, he was in court, wasn't he? Was it last week that?
Yeah, we talk about it on last week's pod.
He was being questioned, wasn't he, over his overreach on crypto and how that's all going. So I think this on top of it, these are all starting to come out now and kick him a little bit more. So I imagine if he's getting pressure from all different places like this, it will help ease the crypto overreach in the US. Overreach is, this is very opinionated, isn't it, I guess, at that point, whether they, he won't believe it's an overreach, but other people will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not much more to say on that, just a follow on, I guess, from the original.
Update on Gary.
We should every
Sweet
week.
Gary.
Yeah.
the weekly Gary Gensler update.
Weekly Gary Gensler updates. Like it.
Nice. New segment.
The Coin Corner news.
We got a new merchant on board.
Oh.
What? It's not disappointed.
Yeah, no. Oh. Don't talk about it. Thanks.
I'll just edit that bit out.
So I was meant to talk to you about that beforehand, but never mind.
Oh, great. Well,
maybe next week.
I got nothing else.
Yes, it's cool.
Right, okay, well, that's it, guys. Thanks for joining us.
It was fun. Do we have any questions this week?
No, because you shut the one down last week that I said as well.
Oh, yeah. So, we need to communicate before the pod, don't we? And just
what you mean?
Oh, I like cashing out on the pod. I
love that we're raw, unedited. Yeah. You know, we're not
raw. Coin Corner raw.
Oh, yeah. Behind the scenes.
It's like we don't talk to each other behind the scenes. Yeah. It's like
People liked my tweet that I tweeted out the other week, showing that we used a Bitcoin miner to weigh down our stands when we record there. I mean, we really do run a lean business model here, don't we?
Yeah.
No professional stands, just all Bitcoin miners.
So do we not have any Coin Corner news?
I got nothing.
Cool.
I came in prepared and you've shut me down, so.
No news, no questions.
Nope.
Can we then, for next week, get more questions? Can we have like
I can tweet out.
We can't force people to ask questions.
Yeah. Well, no, we've not tweeted out, have we?
Oh, no, I did initially.
We did it like 5 weeks ago.
I've been a bit quiet on Twitter recently, to be honest.
Let's get questions out to customers and to people.
Please, guys, my job's on the line here.
Get them in. Cool. I think that's it then. We've got no questions and no Dave.
It's been lovely and peaceful, hasn't it?
We get through without Dave. We don't talk about anything personal without Dave, do we?
No, we don't care about personal shit.
When it's Dave and all he talks about is his dog and his...
getting a haircut.
His kids. His haircut. He still not wore a suit into the office for everybody to listen.
Mm.
He said he's going to. He's still not, has he?
No.
Haircut and that was it.
Right.
Cool.
Right.
Done.
We're off.
All good. Cheers, guys.
Bye-bye.
See you, guys. Peace.